biggest thing that I've learned over the 30 plus years of coaching is that I've had to learn and practice is patience. And that would be with anything that we're doing, and understanding that there's a process, there's a timetable that's with each kid individually. And some kids learn quicker, some kids can embrace the program quicker, some kids take a little bit longer. And with that, you have to obviously embrace that process and you have to have patience with it. And over the outfield fence, Luke Oglesby standing up on the outfield fence, yelling, "April Fool!" And he jumps down and he does back handsprings all the way to the meeting. Awesome deal. It was one of the best April Fool things, and it was one of the funniest stories I can tell.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and you are dialed back into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and another edition of our Dugout Chatter episodes. And if you wanted to connect with the best baseball minds in our game, then you're exactly in the right place. We've got an A-plus episode on deck for you today. But first and foremost, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association, and we're only a couple months away from a new membership year beginning and building towards our January convention in Indianapolis. We're over 8,000 coaches strong right now, but please keep spreading the word, doing your part to grow the game and strengthen this coaching community. Now, we created the Dugout Chatter platform to give us an opportunity to highlight the countless extraordinary baseball men inside the ABCA. And it's been outstanding. Getting to know these guys outside the white lines like a couple of dudes sitting on buckets in our dugout, just catching up and chalk up another tremendous guest with today's show as we talk with Mark Martinez, head coach at San Diego State University with over 30 years inside the game to draw from. Truly getting to know him over the past year has been an absolute pleasure, and we're excited to have each of you draw closer to this great baseball guy. Now, Coach Martinez just wrapped up his third year as a skipper of the Aztecs. He's won two Mountain West championships, two trips to the NCAA regionals, and entering his 13th year in uniform for San Diego State, where he spent 9 seasons as a top assistant under the legendary Tony Gwynn. So we reflect on his time with one of the greatest hitters of all time. Some funny stories come out of those talks, but we also dive into Mark's quest for more information. This is why I'm drawn to this dude. He's always challenging his thoughts on the game as he works to constantly develop and grow himself. Coach is also a great storyteller. Put yourself on a bucket and join us for this great convo. And once again, we're using these segments to help shine a positive light on the extraordinary baseball men that are part of the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity here at the ABCA. And you're in for a treat today with the Fungo Wizard himself, Mark Martinez, head coach at San Diego State University, is our guest on today's Dugout Chatter episode. And get ready, because this great show is coming at you right now. Bringing another Dugout Chatter episode to you guys today, and once again sitting down with a tremendous baseball man, a guy that's dedicated his life to the game, but more importantly is just one of the great guys that's not only inside the ABCA but inside of our great game of baseball. And we're talking with Mark Martinez, head coach at San Diego State. Mark, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Honored, man. This is a great opportunity for me, and a great opportunity to catch up with you as well. So you're one of the guys that we all feel the same way, what you just said. You know, you're a great guy for the game, and I'm just honored to have the opportunity to sit down with you and talk baseball, man.
Well, we had some great moments, especially there in Anaheim. You guys were getting ready to head out of town. We had a chance to hang out in the lobby and catch up and have one of those personal moments where I got a chance to get off my feet. But we actually had a chance to really, sit together and really catch up. And where this feeds right into the first question is, I want to talk about your ABCA experience in terms of your membership over the years, over 30 years in the game, Mark, and being part of ABCA, coming to conventions, but also as well, it's an opportunity, man, talk about hosting Barnstormers and what that did for not only your program, but also just your place in the community there in San Diego.
Well, you know, I think, for the first thing is it's amazing how things just kind of, return to where you started, you know, and my very first ABCA convention, I was actually teaching elementary school in Fruta, Colorado.
Wow.
And, one of my mentors that I'll talk about later, said to me, he said, "You know what? You should go to this convention." Hmm. And, you know, I'm like, okay, it's perfect timing for me. Like, you know, it's during the holiday season. Bought a ticket. Oddly enough, the convention was in San Diego, California.
Of course.
And, of course, right? And then right. The two, you know, keynote speakers were Don Mattingly and Tony Gwynn.
Wow.
And, you know, so that was my first experience here at the Sheraton at the airport. And I remember getting off the plane and trying to hustle my way over to the hotel to, you know, get my badge and get my stuff. And I wanted to get in the front row. I wanted to learn a bunch of baseball. And as I'm going to the hotel, there's a guy in front of me pushing a stroller. And on both sides of the sidewalk, the sprinklers are going off. So I'm like, I'm not going to run around and get wet and go to my first convention and embarrass myself. So I'm kind of like trying to push that guy along. I'm like, you know, I'm a little late, want to kind of get in there. Mm-hmm. And as we kind of broke out into the courtyard, I turned around and looked, it was Don Mattingly. And so
wow.
I was trying to hurry along Don Mattingly. Of course, I swallowed real hard and shuffled off my way and went and found my seat. But it was a great learning experience and really kind of was my first opportunity to sit in front of, you know, great baseball minds and listen to people talk about whether it's infield play, hitting, and obviously I was hooked.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a long time ago. That was in the mid-80s, and it was a great experience for me, and I really didn't know what the heck I was doing. I just, you know, kind of just showed up, and heck, I didn't even get a hotel room that time. I called one of my friends that lived here in San Diego and asked if I could, you know, bunk up with him, and honestly spent maybe, you know, 5 hours a night at his house because I was just running around
sure.
the exhibits and meeting coaches and just having a blast and unbelievable. So that's kind of where my ABCA experience started, was in San Diego over
cool.
30 years ago.
Yep.
And now I'm sitting here in San Diego. It's a pretty neat deal. And to answer the Barnstormer deal is, you know, for me, it's just a great opportunity for, you know, obviously our institution, our program, to have people come and, you know, talk to, you know, some high school coaches, some travel ball coaches. But more importantly is that we got to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to see, you know, guys from USD and UCSD and, you know, Eric Newman and Nathan Choate and all these guys talk. And it helped our program get better. And we're always trying to find ways to upgrade our program. But hosting the Barnstormers event, you put a huge charge into our teaching and learning abilities. It was just a lot of fun for us to be involved, and we're so honored to have that opportunity. And hopefully at some point down the road we can host another one and make it bigger and better.
That's it. And there's no doubt we're going to circle back to you. I really appreciate you saying that. We really enjoyed being out there. It was one of our most well-attended events. But more importantly, to go to your point, man, we had a chance, and you and I had a chance to really spend some quality time together and with Joe, and chance to really mm-hmm. develop some friendships. And that was the really cool part. It had such a transcendent effect that's completely outside of just, hey, we're running a baseball coaching clinic. It's more than that. It's the friendships. It's the relationships. It's the deeper learning. It's the conversations that are outside of what's happening on stage. It's the, you know, the extended versions that are happening
sure.
on the side, and it's just a really cool thing. So we're pumping 20 of those out this fall throughout the Midwest. We're going to try to get you as involved as we can. Wait for another day to announce that one. But I think what's really cool, and again, you talk about developing friendships, and you start to look at programs a little bit differently. And that was a program that you and I were across the ways from each other in 2009. We had a couple first rounders mm-hmm. battling out on Friday night, and then we circle back mm-hmm. and here we are. And it's a program that I pay attention to now because of our friendship. And watching you guys mm-hmm. this year, Mark, was a really neat thing to watch, from the conversations we had about where your program was a year ago and then turning the script this year, going 42-21. But four of the five last seasons, you guys have won the Mountain West. Four of the five last seasons, you've made NCAA regionals. And I'm just interested, especially for this call, let's talk about the transition that happened from you know, personally and professionally from one year to the next, but talk about this team, the culture, the kids. How was it all different this year?
Well, you know, I think just going, you got to talk about the bad before you talk about the good. Mm-hmm. You know, we had, you know, in the previous year we had 21 wins, and you know, the year before that we had won over 40 games also. And we kind of got snake bit by, you know, the draft, and not only, you know, from current players, but we lost some kids to the high, you know, from high school going in the draft. And, uh-huh. And part of the learning experience for me is we kind of got caught a little bit. But the silver lining was, is that, you know, all of a sudden in that 21-win season, the kids that they were kind of biding their time to play, you know, got the opportunity that year, and they kind of had to learn, you know, through handling a lot of adversity and failure. And it obviously made us tougher heading into this past fall, into the, you know, 2017 spring.
Sure.
And really what we all made a decision, you know, during the summer and obviously into the fall, is that the culture and the attitude had to change, because you had to kind of wash out that sour taste in your mouth of you know, just winning 21 games. But we revisited that frequently in the fall, and really more as learning opportunities, is that we did have, you know, we brought up some of the most miserable times or bad losses that we had, and we revisited those throughout the fall and said, okay, what did we learn from these things? Because these were the guys that heading into the 2017 season, we're going to be plugged in again mm-hmm. as starters. So the experiences they had in 2016, you know, obviously made them mentally tougher heading into the 2017 spring. And what we saw, you know, as far as we returned to a culture of blue collar work ethic, mm-hmm. Ownership, accountability, and all those things, and moving into, you know, this past season, we dealt with adversity much, much better than we did before, because we had been through it, and we learned from it. That's what was so exciting for our coaching staff, is that our players learned from the adversity they had the previous year. And so we could have those moments, whether it's during the game, during at bat, throwing a bad pitch. We recovered so much quicker because we said, you know what, not today. Yeah. We're gonna toughen up a little bit and move on. And even when we had some losses during our season, same thing, is that we found out real quick what kind of mental toughness we had within our program. If we made, you know, if we lost on a Friday night, you know, to a really good pitcher, or we made mistakes or whatever, we typically bounced back on Saturday and Sunday and won a lot of series, really based on mental toughness. Right. And so that's what was so happy for us, you know, as the coaches have made us so happy, is that our kids learned, they grew, even though we had, you know, a really rough year the year before. And sure. And really there wasn't a ton of turnover as far as the roster and the lineup. It was just a matter of they had to kind of get forced into some service before they really were ready. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden they were ready, and it equated to, you know, very positive season for us. And you know, kind of moving forward, I think for San Diego State, and understanding that, is that now a lot of the kids that have been in the program, you know, last 2-3 years have experienced postseason, and we haven't won a regional, and now we have to learn from those mistakes, or how we prepared, how we went about our, you know, business during the games in a regional, how to kind of repair some of those so we can move forward and hopefully get into a super regional in the near future.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there's no doubt you've got a huge fan living in Greensboro, North Carolina. I tell you, I try to text you as much as I can without bugging you, but I'm very proud of what you guys did this year, and I know you are too, and excited to see you get over that hump and jump into a super and hopefully end up in Nebraska at some point. Now, we'd be completely remiss. I know how much Coach Gwynn meant to you, but to have, you know, San Diego State on this podcast, we definitely need to reference Coach Gwynn. And I'd love for you, if you could, give us just some insight into who he was. You knew him as good as anyone, but also maybe a couple moments or stories or things that mm-hmm. still stick out to you today that you even think about.
Well, you know, again, first of all, is just kind of going back to my coaching days over in New Mexico, and you know, having the opportunity to, you know, come to San Diego State and play. And of course, when you do that, you know, everyone, obviously Tony's an idol of mine. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that I reference throughout my coaching career as far as offensive approach, how to swing the bat. We use videos, pictures, everything. And you know, we came over here a couple times, and Anthony Gwynn, his son, was playing at San Diego State.
Right.
And, you know, there were those odd times that Tony would be sitting in the stands. And really my first opportunity to really kind of know, you know, who Tony was, is that we came here to play San Diego State when I was in New Mexico, and our first baseman, his name is Anthony Lobato, was the biggest Tony Gwynn fan maybe on earth. You know, he's number 19 all through Little League, high school, the whole deal, had to have 19. Of course, his first year is 24 because someone else had 19. You know how it goes with freshmen.
Right.
But, you know, we came here, and Tony was rehabbing his knee. And we're playing, you know, Anthony Gwynn was playing the year before Tony retired. And we looked up in the right field section, and we used to have bleachers. They used to call it Ragger's Rail during BP. And there's Tony Gwynn and Alicia sitting up in the right field area, which no one really sat anymore. And it's because he didn't want to be bugged. And Anthony Lobato says to me, "Coach, I have to meet him." And I said, "Well, go up there." And he's like, "Well, I'm not doing it." I'm like, "Well, I'm not doing it. We're, you know, we're all nervous. Tony Gwynn,
yeah,
right? You know, you don't bug the guy,
right?"
And so finally, I said, "Okay, you know what? Let's go." So we walked up, you know, to the right field section, went up there, and kind of walked in behind him. And you know, he turned around, and Mrs. Gwynn turned around. Of course, was not happy to see any of us. They're like, "We're bugging him," and right away, Tony saw, you know, New Mexico uniform, young kid, and popped up right away. And he's like, "Hey, what's going on?" And he says, "Hey, Anthony, how's it going?" Knew who he was right away. You know, and the kid melted. And I was like, it brings tears to your eyes just how that happened so quickly. You know, and I introduced myself, and Tony goes, "I know who you are. I've been watching." He says, "I like what you do." And I'm like, "Well, thank you." You know, and I left. And went back to the dugout, and Anthony Lobato stood up there for probably about 10 minutes and talked to Coach Gwynn. Well, he wasn't Coach Gwynn then, but Tony Gwynn.
Right.
And came back beaming, you know, just,
sure.
He's just like, you know, our whole team was just like, "Oh, what'd you get signed?" You know, and he had like his, you know, his glove, his shoe was signed, you know, just all kind of really cool stuff. And, you know, and had great stories, and, you know, he's had a smile probably for 3 weeks after that, you know, and I couldn't tell you how he played, but I know that he couldn't tell you that either. But one thing he will remember is that time that Tony popped out of his seat and said, "Hey, Anthony," and he knew his name right away.
Oh, wow.
And it was unbelievable. So we end up losing that game. We come back the next day as we walking into the dugout, the first base side. We walk in, and who's sitting there the next day? Tony Gwynn.
Of course.
And he's like, you know, all our guys are walking in, and they're trying not to, like, notice he's there. You know, they walk in, and they're kind of act tough, you know, putting their stuff down. And, you know, finally everyone files in. He says, "Hey, guys, I'm here. Get over it. Let's get some stuff signed and get you guys on your way. Let's have some fun today." And he stood there and guys' bats and hats, and it's just unbelievable. And
oh,
so,
wow.
Of course, you know, I got to know him a little bit there, and he retired and he became a volunteer coach here at San Diego State. And we're at Albuquerque, and they're playing us, and he's the volunteer coach, right? And he's sitting by the, you know, the sacred ground of the hitting bubble, right? That's where the dudes sit, and he's watching guys hit. And now it's my turn, and I'm sitting there going, "God, I should go talk to him." And, you know, one of my players, Sean Murray, says, go talk to him." I'm like, "I don't know. I don't want to bug him." You know, and he, like, pushes me out of the dugout. "Just go, you're a coach. Go talk to him." So I went up and, you know, of course, put out my hand. He's like, "Hey, how's it going? Yeah, it's good to see you." And our skipper, Rich Alde, brought some salsa from New Mexico, and he handed it to the Coach Gwynn and hit it off. And I said, "Hey, I just wanted to, you know, say hello and thank you so much for what you did last year. It was unbelievable." And started to walk away, and he said, "Hey, no. He goes, come up here. Let's talk some hitting." And at San Diego State's taking BP, and I'm like, I don't know if I should do this, but it's Tony Gwynn. You know, and I'm like, okay. So I know this is a long story. I hope you have time.
No, I'm all on it.
Okay. And so, you know, he we sit there and we're sitting in the batting cage, and he's we're talking about hitting and kind of, you know, how I talk about him hitting and the stuff that he talks about, the knob inside the ball. And you know, we stood there, you know, for 10, 15 minutes and kind of started to develop a relationship. And, you know, when we saw him the next time around, same thing, we talked, you know, all kinds of stuff and talked about how to structure BP and how we do it, because we had a pretty good offensive club at that time. And next year, he became the head coach, and Rusty Filter, the pitching coach at the time, called me and said, hey, Tony would like to talk to you. And I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. What's up? And he says, hey, at some point, he says, I want to see if I can have you come over and coach for me at San Diego State. And I'm like, wow, honored.
Sure.
I said, but we were dug in pretty deep in Albuquerque, the family, and both my kids were born. And I was like, it's going to be hard, man. And, you know, it took about a year for him to do this, but we came out here for a series, and at San Diego State, they used to have graduation at Tony Gwynn Stadium. And so we had kind of a split series. We played on Thursday night, off on Friday, and then played Saturday, Sunday. Okay. And Tony had called and said, hey, on Friday, what are you guys doing? It's late in the season. You guys want to practice? What do you want to do? And we're like, oh, we don't know. And he goes, hey, let's go play golf. I'm like, what? Okay. And so we'd pack our, we felt embarrassed. You know, we're getting on the plane over in Albuquerque, you putting our golf clubs on, and we're going to play baseball. So we go out to the golf course on Friday, and we're unloading our stuff, and Coach Gwynn looks at me and goes, hey, Mark, hey, you're riding in my cart. I'm like, oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
What? And I felt bad, Rich all day, and he's riding in my cart. Okay. So we start playing, and of course, teeing off, I couldn't spit, couldn't swallow, my knees. I'm playing with Tony Gwynn, man.
Sure.
And, of course, I sucked the whole round, and he kept saying, hey, dude, you need to relax. It's golf. It's not like you're pitching to me.
Yeah.
Like, come on. And so I had an opportunity to go, 18 holes and talk baseball and hit it off. Lo and behold, about a year and a half later, I'm packing up my gear and my family to come over and coach with, Tony Gwynn. I'm so blessed to just have the opportunity. I wouldn't be sitting in this chair if it wasn't for him. And he took care of me, he took care of my family, and allowed me to, grow as a coach. He taught me a lot of things, especially with patience, and understanding how to kind of pump the brakes and not get too excited. I was a little fiery back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an honor for me just to have the opportunity to be, around Coach Gwynn. You want to have the first hitting thing? You want to hear that story real quick?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So we're getting ready to play New Mexico, and it's my first year at San Diego State. And New Mexico had a young man by the name of Danny Ray Herrera.
Okay.
Playing the big leagues with the Pirates. He's about 5'9", left-hander. High 80s, mid to high 80s. He had a Bugs Bunny changeup. It was as good as it gets.
Sure.
We're going scouting report and everyone's like, hey, wait. And I go, look it. You're going to get a changeup at some point during your at-bat. You might as well look changeup because you're not going to hit it. It's that good. He pitched to the big leagues with it.
Right.
And So we try to do as much simulation as we can, throwing left-handed changeups at our guys. And so first inning, we go out, bottom of the first, we go out. I'm coaching third base. 1-2-3 inning, I come in, and Coach Gwynn is just beside himself. He's like, I don't get this. What are our guys doing? I'm like, Coach. He's like, this guy's pretty good, man.
Right.
He goes, yeah, but he's showing it right to you. He's showing it right to you. And I'm like, well, okay. I said, I'm just telling you, we have a plan. We're hopefully looking for a change of whatever. And so we go back out. We get out of the inning. I go back to coach third base. 1-2-3 inning again. Two punch outs and a pop up.
Sure.
Come back in. Coach Gwynn slamming his stuff. And he's like, I don't get it. He goes, I would bust this guy's tail. I would just absolutely crush his tail. Of course. You're Tony Gwynn. And he goes, and he's like, he goes, no, he's showing it right to you. And I'm like, well, I don't know what you're talking about, T. I really don't. And he said, look, have someone else go to third base. And I go, well, who? He goes, I don't care. He goes, we're not going to have anybody on base anyway. He says, go ahead and go to third base. He says, stay in here for a half inning. He says, I'll show you. I said, okay. I'm going to learn from the greatest guy what he's looking at. And I thought, okay, well, maybe the kid's tipping his pitches. How college baseball guys are always trying to hit pitches and location. It wasn't that. And as the guy he hit the ball very well, kind of like turned his back on his kicker step, his rocker step, and, come out, come at you. And And as he's kind of raising his arm up, Tony's like, fastball. And I'm like, I'm sitting there going, okay, what's he tipping, Gus?
Sure.
No, he's showing it right to you. I'm like, okay. He goes, okay, watch this one. Next pitch, you know, and as the guy's arm kind of goes back and comes up, he goes, change up. And it's a change up. I don't see anything. Jeez, sure. I see nothing.
Right.
And I'm like, gee, I don't know what he goes, look. He goes, look, he kind of scoots me closer to the on-deck circle. Just, he goes, he's showing it right to you. Just get in the window. Get right there in the window. You're going to see it. All you do is you sit fastball. You should smoke that thing the other way. He hangs change up. You're going to hit it. I go, okay. And he says, all right, your turn. Go ahead. And of course, he throws, and I guess.
Yes.
You know, and the ball's already in there. It's already in the glove, right?
Right.
Like a fastball. You know, there's no, it's a changeup. You know, I'm like, T, I'm not seeing it. He says, do another one. Just get in the window and do another one. I was like, okay. And so I said, I'm going to bear down really hard now. So I put my hands, you know, over my bill, my hat. And I just, yep. You know, I'm bearing down. And I'm like, okay, you know, and I'm, again, late. You know, he's like, he looks at me, he goes, you're not seeing it. And I go, nobody is.
Yeah.
There's nobody on earth that's seeing it. And he kind of went, he looked at me, he goes, really? And I go, yeah. He goes, you don't see his fingers come off the bar. I'm like, T, I got nothing.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, man. And so, really, from that point forward, Sheets is kind of when Tony and I really started to evolve as, you know, offensive coaches.
Sure.
You know, and obviously, that's a process. You know, I had my own theories and kind of intertwined with him, but we started to come together as a team, you know, the coaching staff, and kind of had one thing in mind. A lot of it had to do with vision and vision training, and you know, Tony devised the string system, and he helped kind of help, you know, devise the V-Flex thing. And
yep.
It all was around, the vision. And it was really cool because, you know, we would sit down every day and talk about how we can put our guys in success and seeing the ball better. And really that night, while I'm sitting there struggling, just like all of our guys, needless to say, we got beat soundly that night.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really cool to see that you know, we really started to develop and get together as a group, and he really started to trust what I was doing, you know, with the offensive side, and not worry about the mechanics, and a lot of it was mental, and it was really cool. And but that was one of the, you know, cool stories that I try to tell everyone, is that, you know, T is definitely a 1% of 1% of 1%, and yeah. He had a, you know, an unbelievable ability. And until that night, I think he learned that he had to try and transfer that knowledge and try and train those guys' vision to try and get some semblance of what he could see.
Goodness.
And it was cool. And obviously, we still use a lot of that stuff.
Yep.
And it grew and got better as years went along. Not that we're 100% every year, but, you know, we're still using that stuff. We had a pretty good offensive year this year. And a lot of it's based on really that conversation. And,
wow.
You know, now it's, you know, 12 years later, but, you know, we're a pretty good offensive club. And a lot of it has to do with how we started to develop an offensive, you know, mindset. Just from that night by Danny Ray Herrera kicking our tail.
How about that? It all comes together somehow, some way. Well, like you mentioned, you're going into your 13th year there at San Diego State, and your fourth as head coach. And, you know, we're looking at over career, though, it's over 30 years. So if you could go back and start from the beginning, just bring us back up to your time there at SDSU.
Oh, well, you know, I kind of going back to that ABCA moment, you know, I was teaching elementary school. I got my degree at Mesa State at the time. It's Colorado Mesa University now. Sounds a lot cooler. I got my degree, started teaching. And when I went to the ABCA convention, I said, you know what? This is something I'm thinking about. But, you know, I'm in a pretty comfortable place. You know, I've got a full-time job. Mm-hmm. Doing pretty good for myself. You know, my degree's working for me. And I had, you know, a couple people, you know, that are my mentors. Jamie Hamilton, who helps run the Junior College World Series in Grand Junction, Colorado. He is my coach in college. And Sam Saplesio. And Sam, the field in Grand Junction is named Sam Saplesio Field.
Right.
And a little bit of background on him. He is very instrumental in getting the Rockies to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I went and sat down with them. They both worked in the same insurance business. And after the convention, I said, hey, you know, I think it's something I want to think about is coaching, you know, maybe some high school stuff or whatever. And Sam and Jamie both said, you need to coach in college. And I said, well, I don't even know what to do. And because they had coached me and mentored me, and Sam looks at me and goes, you need to go get your master's. I'm like, oh, no, more school.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
The last thing you want to do is to have more school.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam had gone to the University of New Mexico back in the day. He was the first All-American at the University of New Mexico.
Wow.
And he was an All-American in football and in baseball. Pretty amazing deal.
Wow.
And so, of course, he had a little juice down there at New Mexico. He made a couple phone calls and got me to apply. And, you know, thank goodness I, you know, did pretty well in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I got into grad school at New Mexico. And that summer, I loaded up the truck, so to speak, and drove down to Albuquerque and started my master's. And at the time, Vince Capelli was the coach at New Mexico. I had no idea who he was. I just walked into his office and I said, hey, want to help out, throw BP, hit ground balls, do whatever I need to do to help out. But just so you know, I'm in the master's program. I'm also teaching classes on campus. So, you know, I'll get out there when I can. He said, absolutely, come out whenever I can. And so that's kind of started my little volunteer, deal in that fall. And,
uh-huh.
And, you know, all of a sudden the juices started to flow. So obviously, you know, I got rid of some classes that I was teaching. I moved my schedule around. So I opened up the afternoon so I could be at practice all the time. And, you know, I found my way on the van at that time, not the bus, you know, on some road trips that spring, and
sure.
You know, just started volunteering and trying to help, and did that. And the next year, Vince retired, and one of my other big mentors, Rich Alday, came in from Pima Junior College,
uh-huh.
And was the head coach at New Mexico, and he brought in his own staff. And you know, I'm like, hey, I'm here to help, do whatever I can. I'm going to finish my master's in mid year, and if you want to keep me, great. If not, I'm going to have to find something, you know, to do.
Yeah.
And they said, sure. So, you know, I basically, same thing, roll up my sleeves, drag the field when I could, and, you know, pull the rake and threw BP as much as they could, and paid attention and listened to, you know, again, Rich Alday is a great baseball mind, and, you know, started to listen to those things and learn from them and apply them to what we're trying to do at New Mexico. And lo and behold, I get my master's, and the following fall, I'm given a paid position, you know, at New Mexico, and it's just amazing how things work out. And I really feel like I worked myself into that and started working there, and, you know, I got paid and started, you know, recruiting and the whole deal and learning, you know, trial by error. And we were very underfunded at that time at New Mexico. We didn't have a full complement of scholarships. Coaching salaries were very minimal, and only had one paid assistant that was me and Coach Alday, and Coach did a great job of building that program and you know, getting it funded properly, but it was definitely a growing process, and had some opportunities to go to some other schools. I interviewed at some other schools, but really felt like I was going to have a better opportunity of learning with Coach Alday.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach Alday was a coach on the USA team, and he was coaching with Mark Marcus and Ron Polk and Skip Bertman and Dave Bingham and Bob Milano. And when we would go to ABCA conventions, that little group of guys was sitting in the lobby, and I got to sit in on those hot stoves, those unannounced hot stoves.
That's it.
I got to listen to some of the greatest college baseball minds ever. And listening to Ron Polk talk about hitting, talking about practice plans and weight programs, and, you know, Skip Bertman talking about pitching. And, you know, I mean, it was obviously, it wasn't all just technical stuff. It was some funny stories too that I
sure.
can't share.
Yeah.
But, but, you know, I started to build a little bit of a network of guys that I could always call upon if I didn't feel comfortable with something I was doing, or we were stagnant somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Coach Polk was always available for me, and I used his baseball playbook in the class that I was teaching in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd always get on the phone during the summer and order up, you know, a bunch of books and talk baseball. And again, it all stems from going to those APCA conventions, whether it was in Dallas or Atlanta or in Chicago. you know, Nashville, wherever they were, you know, found my way there and kind of tagged along with those guys. I got to meet Jerry Kendall and Jim Wing, and a lot of those was, you know, because of, you know, Rich Alday put me in front of those people, and that's how I grew as a coach and got better. And then I ended up at San Diego State, and now I'm the head coach, lo and behold.
Now, we always ask this question, Mark, and I think it's a huge one. We get a lot of great meat from this is, what are some of the lessons learned along the way? If you could really think back to where you were as a young coach and even in the first, you know, 5-10 years getting out there and making mistakes like we all do, what were those lessons that you learned that really have taken you on a different path?
I think the first one I alluded to earlier is, I think the biggest thing that I've learned over, you know, the 30 plus years of coaching is that I've had to learn and practice is patience. And that would be with anything that we're doing. And that kind of goes right into, you know, the buzzword of today, of, you know, embracing process.
There it is.
And understanding that there's a process to what you're doing. And really that goes along with patience, you know, and understanding that, you know, when you're met with a problem, you do not react, you know, you respond, you know, when you react, it's basically an emotional response. When you respond, you've thought it through. You've looked at all the pros and cons of that decision, and then you make the right decision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over my 30 plus years, I was definitely a react coach. I lacked patience. I didn't understand process. I wanted immediate results. And, you know, I haven't been around, you know, a bunch of, you know, bouncing around from program to program, but I think that's also why I've learned a lot of my teaching and mentoring is by being around great people and also putting some of the time-tested, you know, stuff that I've used over the years. And again, that's patience, understanding that there's a process, there's a timetable that's with each kid individually. And some kids learn quicker. Some kids can embrace the program quicker. Some kids take a little bit longer. And with that, you have to obviously embrace that process and you have to have patience with it. And, you know, and some of your best players end up being those guys that might take a little bit longer, but those are the guys that are in big moments when it counts, whether it's in a championship game, you know, of a regional or a conference tournament, you know, or trying to win a regular season title. It seems like those kids that have kind of grinded through and gotten better and steadily gotten better, they're the ones you, all of a sudden they're standing at the plate, you know, or they're the ones making that really big play because they understand process and you stuck with them. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons I've learned as a coach, you know, and as a teacher, is that I have to be patient. I have to understand there's process, and I know that I have 35 kids that are on a different timeline, and we have to embrace that and go with it. And some kids can accelerate, and some kids can't. And so we feel proud that, you know, that we're doing that. I know I have a ton of things that I have to learn and get better at. And that's why I park my tail over at the ABCA convention. That's why anytime I have an opportunity to talk to anybody, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm not recruiting or whatever. If there's a downtime, I'm going to try and find a way for me to get better as a teacher. And so that's what I've learned. I've learned that. I think I have a lot more to learn and to pass on that, you know, that knowledge to our young men and trying to, you know, continue to grow them and make them better baseball players, but really better young men and people that can compete in life. And feel like we're doing a pretty decent job of it. And we continue to, you know, embrace that and embrace that process and continue to try to get better at it too.
Sure. I love that. And you kind of made reference to where I was going to go with it was just how are you continue to challenge what you're doing. But I love the aspect of you're at recruiting events, you're finding opportunities, or they just spring up out of nowhere and you're taking advantage of that opportunity to talk baseball and challenge what you're doing. But are you into books? Are you into podcasts? Or what are you into that's maybe different that you're, again, working to challenge? You have a routine every summer that you go to that downtime, you kind of fill it in an opportunity to challenge yourself?
Well, I think it's connecting with different, you know, whether it's a mental side, whether it's the, you know, the mechanical side, and it's connecting with those guys. And I try to get myself in front of as many people as possible. An example would be, you know, we brought Steve Springer in this past year, you know, to talk to our players. And I've known Steve for a while, but it's not just him talking to our team. It's also engaging him on that sidebar. and understanding kind of, you know, how to turbocharge, you know, that opening day mentality and you know, what are some of his ideas to kind of help us, you know, translate that message to our program. You know, and again, kind of going back to talking when I'm out recruiting, I was with Cooper Fouts, you know, in 115 sure. degree weather out in Phoenix. And yeah. we were just talking about what you and I were just kind of discussing is understanding, you know, the patience and the process, not only with the coaching piece, the teaching piece, but the recruiting side. And then, you know, I'm asking him kind of, what is your structure throughout the, you know, the fall and the spring and what are some of your challenges? And we had, you know, probably, you know, a 45-minute discussion just based on that. And I got better from that discussion, you know, and sure. You know, and I hope to think that I made him better as a coach as well. And it's a great give and take. If you're in that learning environment, even though it's, you know, 110 degrees.
Yeah.
You just, you know, kind of do it. Yes, I do listen to podcasts. I do go online. You know, I try to open up a book every now and again and make myself better. The most recent one was the Urban Meyer one. Mm-hmm. And, I try to find ways that are going to intrigue me and then how that's going to fit into our program and how it's going to help me as a coach, as a teacher, and then pass that along to our coaching staff and ultimately get it throughout our entire program. You know, from our training staff, our strength staff, you know, our athletes, of course. But yeah, I'm always trying to find ways to get better, and knowing that the one thing we do not say here is we never say that we have it figured out. You know, and if a kid comes to me after, you know, he goes in the cage, you know, for half hour and hits up keys, and he comes to me and he says, "I got it figured out." I said, "You need to go back."
Right.
Because you're never going to figure it out.
That's right.
That is not going to happen in this game. And they know that they can't use, and they slip up. Hey, I got to figure out. No, see ya.
Yeah, go back. That's right.
You don't, you know, and don't come back with that. You know, the answer is, you know what, I'm working on it. I'm getting better.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how we approach, you know, how we do it here in our program as well.
That's really cool. If you could think back through those different moments, the highs and the lows, that's a great question that we like to talk about on our podcast that help our coaches just reflect on some of those mantle moments, but then also those ones that kind of kick you in the gut that you still think about today.
I think everyone would recognize that, you know, having Tony's passing, mm-hmm. you know, for me personally was a huge kick in the gut, you know, and again, I owe a lot to him and his family, you know, you know, we really felt like we were building something pretty special at San Diego State. And, you know, just to lose him, not really just as a coworker, but as a friend, was one of my, obviously, baseball low lights, you know, and I'm still recovering from that. You know, I can tell you that he had an office down at the baseball stadium that was this right behind home plate. And I can honestly tell you that I've still not gone into his office since his passing. And really because I just want to remember those, it's sacred ground to me. It's one of those places where there's great memories in there. And I'm afraid if I break the seal of that door, I'll lose those memories. And so that was a huge low for me. And but it's also, you know, obviously taught me some life lessons and I've had to get a little tougher mentally and you know, obviously I think, and to kind of couple that with one of the biggest highs is that, you know, when he was really having a tough time in 2014, you know, we went to the conference tournament and he couldn't come with us, and to, really not do much is just really watch our team, play for Tony. And
sure.
and win that conference championship was one of the most special moments. I'll never forget it. We were playing UNLV at the time, and Tim Chambers and Tony were very close, and Stan and all those guys were very close to Tony as well. And even though they lost, they celebrated with us, and it was just because, you know, it was for
wow.
Tony, and it was one of the bigger moments that I've had in my coaching career. I've had some other really great times, but the most recent low and most recent high are those two moments, is that when we won that, when he wasn't able to come there and be with us to get on the phone and all the guys singing the fight song, and you know, the other coaching staff right there with us. I mean, unbelievable moment, and just gives me chills to the day.
Oh my gosh, can you give me chills. This is tough. This is a tough question that we ask. But again, when you go back to guys who are inside our association, a lot of them are just baseball lifers. But if the game was taken away from you, what would you be doing? If you weren't coaching, what aspect in life would you be dominating?
Well, I can tell you, you know, easily, I'd be a teacher. I would be doing that. And you know, even though I did that for 1 year of my my life, it was a special year. You know, just so you know, I was a PE coach at an elementary school, or PE teacher at an elementary school.
Nice.
Talk about rock star status.
Yeah,
man.
Absolutely.
That is a rock star deal. And it was a very special moment in my life, too. Mm-hmm. And again, it would be something that I know I would be involved with, you know, in the education field, teaching and mentoring young people. And I guess that's a pretty easy one for me. You know, I feel like I'm a teacher now. But if I wasn't, you know, if baseball wasn't part of that teaching, I would still be educating, and that's what I would be doing for sure.
Makes total sense. And where we take this now is we get into hidden talents and hobbies. And these are usually questions that can be answered by the people closest to you. But if you could release out there, what are some of those hidden talents that you have, or what are the hobbies that keep you busy outside the game?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I have some, you know, I'll go fishing.
Okay.
I'll play golf exceptionally terrible. I'm a terrible golfer, but I enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you know, with our lifestyle and how things go, I don't get those opportunities very often.
Right.
Two summers ago, the guys that were here, you know, at the end of the summer, a lot of our players, and what was really cool is a lot of dads. We found a boat that we could charter, and we went out and caught some tuna. It's a great day for, you know, a lot of the guys that got to do it. But the coolest part of the day is that the dads got to go
Be
with their kids outside of the baseball arena.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of, you know, it was, you know, a father son fishing trip. It was awesome, you know, and everybody pitched in, and you know, no egos, and you get on the boat, and you know, you have some guys chumming the water, but you know what? We had an absolute blast. So that, you know, I love doing that, golfing. But honestly, I think what I enjoy more than anything is and this sounds a little corny, but I don't think it is. I love being a dad and being a husband, and I'm blessed to have, you know, a great wife, my wife Jada, and my two kids, Cade, he's 13. My daughter Marissa just finished her first year college at St. Mary's Notre Dame, and that's what really, outside of, you know, my job, that's what I do. You know, I really spend time with my family and try to extend those times as much as I can. If I can be involved with whatever my daughter's doing, or go and watch my son play. It's my anniversary coming up tomorrow, actually Saturday.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
I make time for that, and I try to make sure that, because it is very important to me, because I know I'm very blessed. I'm very lucky to have those people in my life.
Sure. Is there a hidden talent in there? Is there like do you play a trombone or do you midnight and play,
you know,
saxophone at a local club?
I can swing a fungo, man. I'm
there
pretty
is
good
no
at that.
Doubt.
I don't have anything else for you.
I've seen it in action, folks. If you're listening to this, I've seen it in action. It is plenty good. It's best in the league. There's no doubt. We'll go into this too, because I love funny stories. That's why this question is part of every show. Love hearing about funny stories, because every baseball coach listening to this goes, man, I've had a moment similar to that. What's some of the funnier ones that you've had happen over the years?
This one's at University of New Mexico, and it is one of the best pranks ever pulled in the history of the game. We're in New Mexico. We go down to LSU, you know, that connection with Coach Alday and Skip Bertman, and we're playing, you know, at Alex Box Stadium, and it's packed, and we're getting our balls broke. And we had a kid by the name of Luke Oglesby, and he could absolutely fly. And hit that year, his junior year, he stole 56 bases.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, the LSU knows that, you know, and they said, you know, that, and you knew as soon as he squared the bunt or something, they're going to come in, they're going to change their direction, they're going to come inside and make it very hard for him to bunt a baseball because he could fly. I mean, he was, you know, he got drafted, old deal, but the kid could just flat run. And so sure enough, you know, the second game of the series, he squares around a bunt, I bunt for a hit, and ball comes inside, and it kind of lifts him off the ground. He's trying to get out of the way, and it hits him. We don't really know where, but I'll get to that point.
Yeah,
but, you know, he kind of runs down to first base, kind of hobble a little bit, trainer goes out. You know, you're fine, whatever. Obviously, it stopped the run game. Couldn't run much after that.
Sure.
It's not a malicious play. It was just more defending of the bunt, not trying to hit the guy, just make it uncomfortable for him to bunt.
Mm-hmm.
And so we finished series. We come back, and I'm sitting in my office by myself. Coach Alday is not there. And I'm working on the next, you know, series, scouting report, doing whatever, and they knock on the door, and it's Luke Oglesby. And he's got a cast from his top of his knee down all the way, his full cast.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, what are you doing? I go, you played on Sunday. Like, what? He goes, hey, yeah, I went and got x-rays, man. Broken leg.
Oh,
and
my
this
goodness.
Guy is a straw that stirs the drink. You know,
sure.
Leadoff hitter. We could hit that year. I mean, we could really hit. You know, we're starting up conference play. This is the guy. Like, he is the guy that can get things going. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me. And he's like, no, seriously. And he pulls out of his backpack an x-ray. Like, I know how to read x-rays, right?
Right.
And he goes, yeah, look. He goes, yeah, look right here. You can see it. It's this fracture that goes all the way up my whatever bone. And looking at it, I'm like, holy cow, it's broken. I mean, you're serious. And Coach Alley's not there, right?
Yeah.
And so I said, okay. Well, as it happens, Luke's dad is the head trainer at Colorado State University, Fred Oglesby.
Okay.
So I call up. I said, okay, well, you know, because I still think something's up. I'm like, yeah, come on. Did you tell your dad? He goes, no. He goes, he'll be so mad at me. You know, he goes, I was going to wait to tell him. I said, let's call him. I call, you know, and get the training room over at Colorado State, and he gets on there, and Fred was very gruff, tough, you know, dude, and I go, hey, Mr. Oglesby, let me hand the phone over to Luke for you, you know, and he gets on there, and, you know, he starts tearing up, and he's like, yeah, Dad, I broke my leg, and the guy threw at me, hit me, and, you know, I struggled, I played on it, and he said, but I think when I played, I broke my leg. And I'm like, and he goes, and you could hear his dad going crazy.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh no, it is for real. All right. And I said, okay, well, gosh, I guess we just lost our leadoff hitter and we're screwed for the rest of the year. So they hang up the phone and Luke leaves and Coach Alday, 15 minutes, walks in and I go, hey, you talk to Luke? He's like, no. I go, he broke his leg. What? He broke his leg. And, you know, Rich runs down the training room. Sure enough, you know, they're all like, yeah, broken leg, man. Got a cast, got the x-rays right here. I don't know what to tell you. And we're like, oh, my gosh. So we go out, you know, now we're having to do repair work, right?
Oh.
And we're like, oh, my gosh. So we go out to practice that day. You know, you got the huddle before practice. Luke's not there. You know, Coach Ollie's like, listen, someone's going to have to step up. So, you know, huge thunderbolt for the program. You know, we got to suck it up, man. All right. So I'm going to rewind a little bit. So I'm in my office and Luke leaves my office. Okay.
Yeah.
And little did I know, our training room was downstairs. As soon as he got around the corner, he sprinted down the stairs in the training room to call his dad. Okay.
Yeah.
So fast forward, we're at the field. Every guy on the team is just basically faces are white.
Yeah.
Like, what are we going to do? And, you know, Coach Holly's like, you know, hey, man, just listen, we got to suck it up. Someone's going to have to step up. You know, he says, you know, whoever, you guys are going to have to lead off and we're going to be fine. And over the outfield fence, Luke Oglesby standing up on the outfield fence yelling, April Fool's. And
oh,
he jumps down and he does back handsprings all the way to the meeting. Only awesome deal. best. And again, and it was unbelievable. One kid in our program knew it. Ryan Beggs, his mom was a nurse at a hospital, and they devised this whole deal. Coach Aldo had nobody knew.
Yeah.
And they went to the hospital. They put a fake cast on, and of course, it was split down the back. I was too naive to look at the back.
Sure.
And it was one of the best April Fool's things. It was one of the funniest stories I can tell. I tell it to our guys every time. And the reason I tell that story is that I think the art of practical jokes in a baseball program is going away.
Yeah.
And I always tell our guys, listen, it's okay to play practical jokes as long as they're not going to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Because your practical jokes are on a phone on YouTube. So put your phone down and be creative and come up with that story.
Sure.
And so that's one of my favorite ones. You know, it's a baseball deal. Great April Fool's joke, and he got me good. He got the whole team. So
that's awesome.
Luke, if he ever hears that, he got us, and they still tell that story to this day, trying to encourage our guys to have a sense of humor, man.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Transcends time. That's a really good story. This is a great question. I love offering this to our guests, and this is one that I'm sure you're ready for. Is your personal Mount Rushmore. So if you could, Mark, talk us through maybe the three or four guys that really impact you the most, that if you had to build your own personal Mount Rushmore, you're going to put those people on it.
Well, I've talked about them all today, you know, and you know, Tony Gwynn would be one of them, and it's because he's impacted me, you know, greatly. I really feel like I was brought here for a reason. And Tony made that happen, and I'm honored and blessed to have this opportunity to coach at San Diego State and be the head coach at San Diego State. So he 100% would be up there. The second guy would be Jamie Hamilton. He is still my friend to this day. He is my mentor. I call him several times a year. I saw him at the ABCA convention and had dinner with him and the junior college group over there, over in Anaheim this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie has just impacted my life. He's made me a better man, a better father, a better husband. And he is like my second dad. And I, again, blessed to have him in my life and his family in my life. And then finally, the third guy, of course, is Rich Alday, who gave me an opportunity. You know, a young guy that's teaching elementary school kind of took a flyer and went to University of New Mexico with the idea of going back to Grand Junction and being a high school coach. And to have Coach Alday, you know, allow me the opportunity to be a part of his program as he was starting that program and building that program. So honored and blessed to have him part of my life, and him and Norma, and just those three people have shaped me who I am today. And again, I'd do anything for all three of them.
That's so cool. All right, man, wrap this up. Take us home with this question as we ask you to offer lessons and advice for all the coaches, especially the young ones, because we do have a lot of our demographic is going to be those young 22, 25, 28, 30-year-old guys that are listening to the show. What would you offer those guys? Set them off on a different path.
Yeah, I love that question, because we've talked about a lot of, you know, about this today.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing, you know, as a young coach is focus on what's in front of you. Focus on that task, you know, and basically that's all inclusive. That task is the program that you're in, the head coach that you're with, the people that you're surrounded with, or if you are the head coach, focus on that task, you know, and understand that embrace that process, and that it, whatever you want to do at the end, the result, you'll get there by focusing on the process and not looking to what's next. You will earn that opportunity. And you don't have to go seek those opportunities aggressively if you're focusing on the things that are in front of you, because that's how you build a great resume. Mm. And then the other thing that I would say that kind of intertwines with that is make sure that you're loyal to the people that you're around. And if it's the program, if it's your athletic director, if it's your head coach, be loyal to those people. And even if it's a situation where you might not agree with something that your boss is doing, or, you know, a budget issue, whatever it might be, make sure you're still loyal to that program, because those people will always be in your corner if you're loyal to them. Mm-hmm. Again, that's part of building your resume. And I think that's one thing that I see sometimes with some younger coaches, even out recruiting, you know, might be taking shots at, you know, if they had a bad year, taking a shot at a head coach or another coach. That's not loyalty. That's your ego getting in the way. Check your ego, stay loyal to who you're with, and great things will happen to you in the on the back end. Mm-hmm. And focus on that process. Focus on what's in front of you, the tangible things. Don't focus on the intangible, the next job, the next whatever. Focus on those things that are right there in front of you and do a great job at it and bust your tail. And don't be afraid to pick up a rake and mow the grass and do whatever. And ultimately, be honored and blessed you have an opportunity to be around young people and impact their life.
I was looking forward to this interview for a reason, because, man, you are a terrific storyteller. You're just a great guy to sit and just talk shop with. Mark, I really appreciate you being on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. We obviously are proud of what you guys have done this year, but excited to see what you do moving forward. We're happy to have you inside the ABCA. We hope to see you out in Indianapolis, and hopefully you and I will catch up a lot sooner than that, man. But thanks for being on the call with us today, Mark.
Jeez, honored and blessed. Thank you so much for having me, man. We'll hopefully see you very soon.
Yeah.
Hopefully by October, man. So, but thanks again, and thank you for your friendship.
Thank you,
Thank you very much.
Dynamite insight from a baseball lifer, Mark Martinez, head coach at San Diego State. Some terrific takeaways from Mark's words. Love to hear him profess to being a lifelong learner. I truly don't think we can stress that enough, guys. The very best in this game all talk about challenging themselves, constantly seeking new information, reading books, listening to podcasts, not being stuck in their thoughts and in their way. And if you're listening to these shows, then you're on board with that line of thinking. It's easy to see why Mark is so well-respected around the coaching community. Huge thanks to Coach Martinez for carving out some time from the recruiting trails to join us on the show. Best of luck to you, Coach, your staff, and the Aztecs moving forward. Thanks, Mark. Guys, the hits just keep on coming, and we don't want you to miss out on the exceptional lineup of guests we're bringing your way. So here's how you stay up to speed with us. Number one, head over to iTunes or Google Play. Hit subscribe. Make sure that show shows up on your phone every single time we put a new one out. Number two, stay plugged into our website, abca.org. If you click on the education tab at the top, Calls from the Clubhouse podcast link's going to be right there waiting for you. Click on those shows. And number three, give us a follow on Twitter at ABCA1945. You'll always see the release of the show as we continue to put that stuff out through social media. You can find me on there as well at CoachSheets3, or you can reach me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. Whether it's where you listen to these shows, love hearing about coaches listening to these in Automobile University or in the gym or just mowing at the ballpark, or it was a certain guest or maybe a dime that they dropped inside the show, coaches, tweet at us, send us a message, let us know. We always welcome in how these shows are hitting you on the other end of the call, and we hope to hear from you soon on that. Now, with Home Run Derby last night, I'm sure the majority of you were scrolling through Twitter and you saw a flurry of activity that was going on. That was our hashtag ABCA chat that follows the release of our main shows, where we connect with coaches from all over the world to talk through coaching topics, fundamentals of the game, and help strengthen this coaching fraternity. It's a tremendous platform to connect and network and share your thoughts and also challenge those against what others are teaching inside this game. It's an awesome time, and we hope you make plans to join our next hashtag ABCA chat on Monday, July 24th, at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Bring a friend with you, and we look forward to seeing you checking on our next chat. Plus, make sure you check out our ABCA Barnstormers clinics, as we're planning to hit 20 cities this fall on our Midwest tour, building positive momentum towards our January convention in Indianapolis. Now, these are for you, the coaches. These are one-day coaching clinics from the very best teaching clinicians in the area. Think of it as a mini ABCA convention, except it's inside your backyard. Check out the lineup, the dates, the locations. Go to our website, abca.org/clinics. Sign up, come jump on the ABCA Barnstormers Clinics Tour Bus this fall. And just in case you didn't know, only $45, guys, gets you inside the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity here at the ABCA.
We want to make sure you have all the information in front of you. Head over to our website, abca.org. Check out the membership benefits. Check out all the great things we're doing for our coaches and for this game. And lastly, as always, guys, thank you for listening in. We appreciate you staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And until next week, keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging what you're doing inside the game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.